The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 499. It's the 6th of June, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Investor Relations Guru. That's what he sent me in the email. So can you use that as my introduction? I said, of course I will. Tongue in cheek. Sasha Sethi talks about the following stocks: AsiaMet, Tulu Energy, Upland Resources, Amrit Pharmaceuticals, and Canadian Overseas Petroleum Limited. Stocks that I quite like, and I think you should do some research on them. I really do. I think they have lots of potential. And if you go to the blog site here, that's foxmarkets.co.uk/blog, and click the link there. You can just click on those links there and follow them on your Fox Markets watchlist page. Also, today's stock with potential is suggested by Pork Chop Minty. I wonder if that's a real name or not. And it's Motive Bio. I'll read that out later. But also, listen, I wonder if you could do me a huge favour. Today, I've been sent a link to help fund Nick to get to the US. Nick has contracted Lyme's disease, and there's not much time left. So any bit of money could help at all. Just go to the page here, and there's a link there. And you can read a little bit about Nick's story right here on the page. But essentially, we need to get Nick to the USA to get treatment for Lyme disease. And anything you can give, anything whatsoever, would help. So we'll just go, like I said, foxmarkets.co.uk, /blog, click the link there, read the story, and please donate anything, however little. It's always welcome.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sasha Sethi, the investor relations guru. Sasha asked me to say that, but he is a bit of a guru, I got to admit. And he's been the one behind AsiaMet, and you introduced those to me. Thank you for that, Sasha. You've also introduced me to a lot of other companies who I quite like and I do own. So I've got to put it out there. A lot of the companies we're talking about right now, I do own. But like I said, do your own research. Sasha, thanks for coming on, fella.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me. And I did not tell you to call me a guru. It's your idea.
I've got it in print right here. But right. No, listen, you are carving a little niche there, Sash, because I think most of the stocks you represent or you forward on to me saying worth a bit of a researcher, they are stocks I like, you know? And, and the small cap arena can be a bit of a minefield. You know, I've known a lot of stocks blow up and people lose a lot of money. And so it's good to have that, you know, reassurance. You know, I mean, you will never represent a company that's a bit dodgy. I know that for a fact. So I know when you suggest me do a bit of research on a company, it's a good-looking company. So let's start off with our friend and yours, the Tony Manini stock, AsiaMet. What's happening at AsiaMet, Sash?
Well, Tony went away. There was a lot of excitement before the PEA, which was delivered in, April? And I think, Tony delivered on everything that he said he would do, kept his word about not raising money at discounts. I think all the figures that he came through with, they knocked the ball out of the park. There was a little bit of, time lag between the PEA being delivered and the next stages of work. And I think the stock consolidated around 2, but certainly there's a lot more interest now because, everything is mobilized on site to take it forward to the next stage. We just delivered the most important milestone in the company's history to date, but now Tony's working forward on what's an even bigger milestone and probably the final big phase of work before all the institutions and the banks start to get interested, and this is what the feasibility study is. So, there's not just that. There are also several other in-flight items of news flow going on, especially around the licenses. There's probably about 4 license items in flight, which I can go into in a bit of detail.
Yeah, in the RNS, there's some confusion over the cancellation thing. Was it cancellation? Where it turns out what that means is extension, doesn't it? Can you highlight that? Because they said they were cancelling 2 licenses or something. And that confused a lot of people, didn't it?
Yeah, good point. I think the stock dropped a bit on that due to some uncertainty. The problem was the Indonesian government described this particular item as a suspension, okay? And that word came through in a very positive RNS. But I'll just start, I'll start from the beginning here. Basically, Tony has, or AsiaMet at the moment, have their 2 biggest assets, 3 assets They have Botong, they have BKM and Gelai. Now, Botong and Gelai are exploration assets at the moment. So, as you can understand, with an exploration asset, they have they only have the rights to explore on the property and not to take it forward to production or to development. Now, with any company, it's all, especially in the mining space, it's all about de-risking. And having a full year, full term, 20, 30 year production license de-risks your security of tenure on the license massively. Now, what Tony's done here, he's taken both those through to the latter stages of the application, which certainly for Botong, the final presentation to the government was given last week. Mm-hmm. And they're just waiting back to hear. Now, at this time, round about that this time, the licenses, the expiration rights were due to expire. It doesn't mean they expire immediately. They have a few months afterwards to keep on going. But if you have an exploration license in Indonesia, according to the letter of the law, if you've done all the work and met all the requirements, you are guaranteed to have this upgraded to a production license. But what Tony was doing, as an insurance policy, he's negotiating with the government as well. He's waiting to hear back on the upgrade to production, but he's negotiating with the government to suspend any expiration on the licenses for a year. So this effectively pushes his hold over these licenses out till June 2017. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you can understand why there was maybe a little bit of confusion, but there's two positives there. Now, if the insurance policy is just in case he's been told that he has to go back and do a little bit more work, or they want to ask a few more questions, etc. And who knows? These things take a long time sometimes, you know. So, but he's got another year on them both. Well, hoping to hear back confirmation of that soon, which will telegraph to the market. But there's two very strategic items, and you know, coming through here soon, which is one, Botong. Now, Botong's a huge asset with billions of pounds of copper in the ground there, and it's got huge strikes from surface down 200 or 300 meters at very high grades, and that's the jewel in the crown for Asia Met's in its portfolio. Apart, you know, that's in addition to BKM, which is where all the work is going, has been going on, has been and is going to continue to go on at the moment. But let's say, in theory, a production license gets granted, and it'll be a 20-year production license with an option to extend for 10 years and then another option to extend for another 10 years. Now, this, with that title and the security of that license, with the letter of the law, he will have, you know, he's now in a position to go out to the big boys, you know, the majors, the big copper producers, to try and get them to, you know, to form a strategic partnership to move those forward. Now, big companies are obviously very risk averse. So if Asia Met hear back positively on Botong, then this is a big, big tick in the box. So it's a very, very important piece of an initiative that's going on at the moment. Now, it's a similar case with Gelai. Gelai is the gold asset, the smaller gold asset. Now, there's been some excellent gold strikes there in the past, but Tony and Steve Hughes, they like the asset a lot, but they want to concentrate in the copper. Gelai is probably a little too small for them, but they've had a lot of interest with partnership deals and looking at some way to monetize those assets and bring in the cash to recycle that into the feasibility study on, let's say, BKM. So if we get that through, then that could be very, very good for potentially doing a little deal on an asset, you see?
Yeah, and what I didn't understand, though, right, is why the share price came back on the fact that they announced the suspension, which people understand now, but also they had a tax rebate close to $1 million. And yet, so two, you know, positive bits of news, and there was weakness in the share price. I don't understand that, really.
Sometimes, I mean... You know, the market's different every single day, and I can't tell sometimes why the share price has risen or why it's fallen. Most of the time, we have a very good idea, but that was a bit of a mystery to me. I know that maybe, you know, we've obviously addressed the little bit of confusion there that may have been having over the suspension of the expiration of the licenses, but no idea there. But I think the market thought about it for a while, and certainly last week, they just bought back into the weakness.
Yeah. I mean, on Friday, he was up by 30% at one point, and Yeah, came back, I think it finished 15% up, and it's up today. So I think now we've seen that support levels are around about 2 pence. So
absolutely,
I think, you know,
and there's another million. There's another $1 million in the bank as well from the tax rebate. Now, obviously, the Indonesian government are working very well with Asiamet. If they, you know, if they're happy to hand back cash so that Asiamet can develop the assets further, you know.
Yeah. So timeline-wise, what are we looking for in the next couple of weeks, couple of months, maybe? What's the next thing we're looking for? Is it the grant, the licenses? Is it?
Yeah, I'd be keeping a very close eye, having it on your watch list for those. We've got the Botong license for sure, which, as I said, it's been through the final applications and we're waiting to hear back. Jelai is out there as well. Interestingly, BKM, where all the work has been doing. Now, BKM has a 30-year production license on it already. Now, there were a couple of changes which needed to be applied to the license, and they're more kind of technical, you know, government royalty things, where it was just a ratification and confirmation. Now, we should hopefully be getting the ratification of that coming through at some point soon there too, which will, you know, reiterate that there's the 30-year production license has been granted to Asiamet. Whilst we're on licenses, Tony's also applied for a permitting license so that he can drill up a new area named Baroy. Now, we've never really mentioned Baroy before, but I think the historical grades that they've had there seem to be, from talking to all these guys, you know, a geologist's wet dream. You know, from surface, they've had hits of one in particular as good as 31 metres at 3.6%. You know, that's amazing. So that's, you know, it's certainly some good news for them, good growth options there to look at in due course. But the work going on at the moment, the feasibility work is now starting at BKM, which is BKM is where we recently released the PEA studies, which showed, you know, all the financials on it, the cash flows, the operating costs, the net present value of the company of that project, and it was all very positive. So
Baroy, just make it clear, Baroy, this is very, well, it's very close to BKM. Is it where is it in geographically?
It's
where
not,
is it?
It's in the north of the cluster. BKM's just one small project in a cluster called the KSK cluster. Mm-hmm. Asiamet hold production rights to all the projects within the cluster. This is just one of many projects in that cluster. So it's to the north of this cluster of projects. Okay. It's probably quite far from BKM. He'll be looking to, you know, if that progresses and there's a resource there, be looking to bring in a third party on that one and concentrate on BKM. But, you know, it's such an interesting asset, and this, you know, the growth for the company. Companies always need to be looking at, as well as development, but, you know, a little bit on the growth side. So let's say, in theory, BKM is looking as good as they'll, you know, as they think it might be. You could potentially look to commercialize, partnership, sell the asset, bring in more money to concentrate on, you know, the low-hanging fruit, which is BKM.
Okay, well, that's ticked off, covered off Asiamet there. Let's look at a couple of other companies there you represent. Tolu Energy. Now, I had these in the podcast last year, and I liked a lot what they were saying there. Shareholder register, you know, the fact that the guys have been doing this kind of stuff before. It's CBM, coal bed methane, isn't it, in Africa there, and in Botswana. Explain what this is all about. And I bought some about a couple of months after the podcast. It's stuck in my head. I was chatting to Colm there. I really like what he was saying. He knew his stuff, and I was really impressed by it. And I get lots of people coming on the podcast, and sometimes some of them stick in my head, and this stuck in my head. And so I did buy a few shares, you know, in this company. Tell us a little bit about Tolu, TLOU ticker. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Colm did come out, you know, I think a few months ago, just to introduce the story. But these guys have been working very, very hard. Well, let's start the management team first. You know, using your little, I think, you know, I always hear you want to talk about the management first. Now, it's headed by a gentleman named Tony Gilby, who is one of the pioneers of coal bed methane to power in Australia. Now, Tony was behind a company named Sunshine Energy, which he sold to British Gas for $1.1 billion. So he's in the kind of Tony Mannini club as well, as, you know, and he did it again with another company named Arrow Energy as well. So he was very instrumental with that too. Now these guys, after that, they were looking for new projects, and I think, you know, they kind of scoured the globe looking for good CBM, coal bed methane projects. You know, obviously the coal bed methane needs to be located near big coal high quality coal assets which produce the coal bed methane, and he's also looking for a market for the coal bed methane, and Botswana seemed to be perfect because Botswana imports for all its power needs, it imports diesel from the neighbouring states, and it's very, very expensive to run you know, a country on diesel power. So hence, it's got shortages. So Tony Gilby and Talu Energy have been advancing this asset for quite some time. They've got certified contingent resources, 3.2 trillion cubic feet in the ground, and they're near a market which is very, very hungry for power. And if they can prove, which they're doing at the moment, they're trying to prove at the moment, that they can flow the gas at commercial rates. Mm-hmm. So that's what's been going on at the moment. If they can do that, then there's a lot of options for them to supply Botswana, the local Botswana industry, with gas to power. So gas to power projects they'll be looking at from there. For example, they've got a deal with the government. The government has put out tenders for pilot projects, gas to power pilot projects, and to lose one of the applicants for that. If the government comes back with a positive, let's say, offtake agreement for them, then they've got a ready market for the gas. Now, at the moment, there's a lot of gas flow testing going on at their assets, and hopefully we'll see, as they progress, you know, a little more news from the company to update us on how that's going. If they, you know, let's say they get nothing from the government, they've also tendered for, Botswana has the world's biggest diamond mine. It's called Orupa, and that has demands for 90 megawatts of power, and they're running that mine off diesel. Now, diesel is 30 cents a kilowatt hour. And if you've got gas in the ground, and you could plug in gas to a power plant, you could potentially supply that at anywhere between, let's say, it takes, I don't know, guessing 3 cents to produce, and what they're currently paying on the 30 cents. If they can do that, you know, if they've tendered for that deal as well, and plus a couple more, there's a lot of potential for this company.
Yeah, now, and of course, coal is, like you said, diesel, you know, not only expensive, but seen, it's frowned upon environmentally, isn't it? It's a dirty fuel kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a much cleaner source of energy, and as well as that, much, much cheaper too. Botswana's also neighbouring South Africa, so if they can prove, they've proved they've got huge gas reserves in the ground. Now they need to just prove they can flow it at commercial rates. Once they do that, I'm sure they'll have no problem in plugging into, you know, a number of different, options for people to buy it and to turn it into power. But they want to be vertically integrated, not just, this is part of the strategy, it's not just going out and, let's say, drilling for gas and looking for, you know, somewhere to pipe it into or selling it. They want to own the power plants as well and supply and sell the electricity to the offtake, to those who'll be taking the part of the offtake deal, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, they are still just a market cap of 7.7 million, and given their, you know, given the assets there and the experience in the company, I think, you know, they said it's undervalued at the moment, I think. And of course, if they get this commercial provability, I can see the share price really going through the ceiling a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I'll just round off quickly on this one, because I think it'd probably best to roll Colm out.
That's him.
That's my phone going.
That's Colm on the phone there.
That's unfortunately not. I could have plugged it in and say, oh, Colm, answer these. But what was I saying? Now, the Yeah, this company, it's an Australian dual-listed company. It's been valued at a much higher market cap in Australia. It floated over here very quietly in November at the end of last year for about 6.5 pence, which is about approximately £15 million. So I think there was not a lot of liquidity. They weren't really saying very much. You know, there were a few shares sold here and there. I think there were a couple of... there was, you know, someone playing a little arbitrage in Australia and converting some of the shares here, and it's, you know, on a very low volume, it kind of trickled down to the prices it's at now, which is about 3.5, I think. But certainly, as soon as the Toluca can start updating the market, and if they're positioned to update the market positively on how they're testing, saying, then it could go quite well. And the testing is currently ongoing at their Salemo project, where they've got three wells, which they're plugged into the gas. They're trying to dewater. It's all about dewatering the bringing the water out of the ground so that the gas can just start flowing after that. And they're measuring it every day. One well's got, as per the RNS, it has now a sustained rate. They need sustained rates on them all at commercial levels. I think as more water comes out of the wells and the supporting wells pull it out, then the gas that comes out flows at a higher rate. So, you know, we just have to see, and let's see when Colm's ready to update. Hopefully soon.
Okay, well, that's AsiaMet and Toulouse. And also Upland. I do hold this. Who's it I had on from Upland? Is it Steve, I think, was it?
Dr. Steve Staley, yes.
Yeah, Dr. Steve Staley. And he was involved, of course, in 80 Energy. And it's been a while since they've had any news. You should get Steve back on, but just tell us the state of play with Upland Resources.
Yeah, Upland, well, again, you know, Steve's a very eminent petrogeologist who is a very... cautious chap as well. You know, he does some very rigorous due diligence on any place he goes into, but hence his success with the 88 Energy discovery and Cove Energy as well, which he and the Cove team successfully sold to the Thai National Oil Company for again 1.2 billion. So it's, you know, this little group of companies are all have done it before. They're deliverers, and they know how to build up small companies. Are you familiar with the Hardstoff asset? They had a successful license application round with the 14th onshore UK round, where the government distributed oil and gas licenses onshore to various companies. So Upland was one of the companies who was successful there, and they were given the Hardstoff license, which is an asset that Steve knows very, very well, and which was actually the first producing oil well ever drilled in the UK back in 1919. Mm-hmm. So back in 1919, this asset produced successfully for about 5 years, and then it declined to the rates where it, you know, wasn't really worthwhile. But, you know, we're 100 years later, technologies have changed. You know, back then they wouldn't even have had seismic. And it turns out that they drilled the well originally in the wrong place. So there's been, you know, a lot of work done on that asset with there's a competent person to report and they've measured the oil reserves. And the Upland Consortium has, I think it's sitting on something which could be quite good. I mean, well, very high, could be high impact, low cost, low risk for investors, because there's the competent person report has indicated there's an 80% chance of success at one of the assets there and a 60% chance of success at the other assets, you know. So it could be a very, very low cost, low risk asset, which they'll be looking to develop and push forward soon. What they are waiting for there at the moment is the official confirmation from the UK Oil and Gas Authority that they've been granted the license to work on. And I think as soon as that comes out, and it's something to look out for, then we shall see some further progress there. But that's not all that's going on with Upland. Steve has, you know, he's indicated that he's looking at in several locations around the world for attractive assets. One is Malaysia, where you may have noticed that the chairman of the company, who also owns nearly 29% of the company, having bought some on the open market a little while ago, it's a gentleman named Norza Zakaria. And he was very senior at Petronas, which is the Malaysian state oil company there. But, you know, so he knows Southeast Asia very well, and they're working very, very hard trying to, you know, get something appropriate into the company. But, you know, like with anything, they've got rigorous due diligence processes, and they are very risk averse as well. So, you know, let them continue what they're doing. Steve's also looking at various things in Morocco, onshore UK, you know, and, you know, he's open to a lot of ideas, but they have to fit with his, you know, to give him a certain level of confidence in being able to commercialise these and do it at the right level of risk.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that came across to me when I was chatting to him, and also after the record, he said, yeah, the thing is, the difference between, you know, essentially a good asset and commerciality is due diligence. And we are, you know, and he seems that one of these guys, that it doesn't matter how long it takes, he's got to make sure he's very confident in what he's about to go into. And it came across very well, and he's very into the detail. And I was very impressed with that. And that's why I bought a bit of stock afterwards. So I thought, yeah, this guy, he knows what he's talking about, and he knows all about the risks. And he's not going to take, you know, a risk that will not sit comfortably with him at all. You know, he won't take that kind of risk. So I quite like that. I like what he's all about. So, OK, that's three there. You put on the watch list there. Asia Met and Tulu Energy and, of course, Upland Resources. And one or two others, you sent an email to me. There's two others I quite like the look of. I'm looking at the moment. What are they and why are you looking at them?
Yeah, well, I've got a position in a company, and I saw yesterday or today that you may have bought some as well. But
I did, over the weekend. I tweeted out. I said, guys, I'm looking at two companies here. I think this is, I mean, in a macro environment now, I think it's time to be bullish on oil. I do think, you know, the equilibrium between supply and demand is coming down. It's coming back into balance a little bit towards the end of the year. That's what all the experts are saying. And I'm thinking, right, now let's look at some good oil assets. So I was looking at SDX, and I was also looking at COPL, you know, COPL, Canadian Overseas Petroleum Limited. And I just did a bit of research on both. And I thought, at the moment, there's, you know, there are different kind of assets, because I know one's producing revenue. That's SDX. But I quite liked the fact that the placing now, below the placing price, is COPL. And I looked at that, and I looked at their asset in Liberia there, and also their partner there is ExxonMobil, you know? And I thought, wow, that's an amazing partner to have. And so I thought, you know, at this level, I can't see a lot of risk. You know, they've raised cash. And so, COPL, what do you think on those?
I think the same. I've got stock. I took some stock in the placing a little while ago. I can't remember what it was. About 3.5 they did it at.
Yeah, no, it's 0.07 cents. So I think it's just under 4. Yeah, pence it was. So I think I bought them at 3.59 today. I think so. I know that's just a bit below the placing price. I think it's around about the same. I know, or just below. And so I thought that's fine for me. I'll take it in the market, open market here at placing price or less. You know, it's fine.
Yeah. Look, these guys are, you know, they've got a partnership with one of the biggest oil companies in the world, and they're funded for, well, depending, it's a certain amount. I can't remember how much. You'll have to get the CEO on to describe more. But they're covered for, I don't know, it's $150 million, $200 million on the wells.
Yeah, no, 120 million. Yeah, yeah.
120 million, which is a lot. That could cover them for two or three drills on what they, you know, they've flown a lot of seismic, and they've done seismic over this, you know, this potentially huge structure. Now they think there's a 40% charge that it's oil down there as well. And you know, all the seismics and all the technical studies are coming in well. Exxon love it, Canadian Overseas love it, and you know, if they drill there could be a huge amount of excitement. And as you know, the market loves these big oil drills. You know, remember what happened to ATA Energy, and ATA Energy came back positively with all their oil shows down there and all the, you know, all their results there. You know, in that period, I mean, commercializing it is a different story, and it's a different, you know, developing the assets is different. But for drilling for discoveries, they're at these levels, it could be a very, very interesting stock to be into, especially as the market gets excited closer to the actual drilling itself.
Yeah, and I was just looking at this. It's going to be drilled late this year. And so we've got a timeline in place there. Like I said, they are, carried by ExxonMobil. And I just like, and it's not their only asset. They've got assets in Nigeria, haven't they? And other places as well. So it's not all they have. And I just think,
I'm sure that they're always looking to build their portfolio and do deals in other places. And, I think maybe as they get more confident on the other assets, they may be able to enter into, more partnerships there and have one or two plates spinning at the same time. The dates, the thing with this, though, there's no set date yet for the drill to happen.
Yeah.
It could be quarter three, quarter four. I mean, he's indicated the autumn, and I'm sure it's in their interest to get it done as soon as possible. But I think there's certainly, I'm a patient investor, and as I research more and get to know a little bit more about them, I definitely think there's quite a bit of time to start adding and building a position there before the market, before the drill date's announced, before the market gets excited.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay, let's. We stuck on resource company, oil companies, and all that as yet. But I know another one on your list you're watching, which is not in this sector. What is it?
It is Amrit Pharma. Do you know those guys?
Yes, I do. I've been looking at them for a while, and they rallied. In fact, Smudge Dan came on the podcast a while back. He's been into them a while. I think Doc Holliday's mentioned them as well when they were Fastnet, and I didn't take anything then. But I've got to say, do you know what? I bought some today. I researched them on the weekend. I was reading their presentation and reading about the management. I liked them, and it's below the place in last place in price, 24 pence. I think I bought them for 18, I think, pence today. So, yeah, I'm quite happy. I mean, again, it's the management and the asset that's worth looking at. And the fact it's below the last placing price, I quite liked. The ticker code is AMYT. I'll put this on the website there so you can click through to follow them if you want. But, yeah, so what do you think there?
I think you were looking at it for very much the right reasons as well. But, I think this company, they're not messing around. They're strategically getting involved in orphan drugs. Now, orphan drugs are drugs which are, they're created to address individual diseases which may have been, orphaned and left behind by research going on by the big, multinational GlaxoSmithKlines, etc. And, it's a very specialist area, but the market for orphan drugs, if you can prove an orphan drug and, they obviously, they work out how much this drug be worth and how much they can sell it for according to the potential market for this drug. The market, for orphan drugs is huge. If they can successfully bring it through the various trials, the phase three trials, the clinical trials, etc., and commercialize it. So this is a play on Amrit building up a portfolio of these drugs, and then looking to commercialize them. And orphan drug market is just huge. And as you said, it did drop a little bit, and I think it probably dropped a little bit because it had some legacy Fastnet holders in it, because it was an oil and gas company that then they cleaned up and turned it into a cash shell, and then reversed in this company with management. They've done this thing time and time before. They've got a very good track record, and I just like the story. And I thought they've got one drug called Episalve, which is at phase three trials. They've been given been given various licenses. They're waiting on one more to able to market it within the EU. It's de-risked to that extent that this drug is nearly commercial. So as the drug gets commercial, they have opportunities to either make money from distributing the drug or look to sell the rights to it to somebody bigger. And when these sales happen in the biopharma space, they're for significant amounts as well, which is this drug be worth multiples of their market cap.
Yeah, and I was doing research there, and I saw a broken, I don't know where it's from, I think. I can't remember, Shard maybe. But I mean, look at their peers, relative peers, and the valuations compared to Amrit, and they're way below on evaluation purposes compared to their peers. So that was a very interesting read.
Absolutely way below. And well, one reason for that is because a lot of these valuations are based on US companies, you may have noticed.
And
in the US, they, you know, they give some pretty chunky valuations, but I know the M&A space there is quite big as well. Now, Amritz have indicated that one day they may wish to be listed over there too, you know, to try and get a more kind of bigger, punchier NASDAQ valuation. But, you know, I certainly think for the moment there's a lot of value here when you compare it, because, you know, the drug industry is global, and if someone's going to be buying a drug or a drug company, they're the majors, and where they're listed doesn't really matter.
Exactly. Marvellous. Thanks, Sash, coming on. Give us a heads up on 5 stocks there. I'll put the links to all these stocks on the website, and I'd advise you putting them on your Vox Markets watch list and do some research on these companies, because, like I said, you know, this is a combination. All these things have something in common, I suppose, and that's, you know, the assets they have and the management they have, you know. So you've got to pay attention to a company that have management there, that have done it before. And they're in a similar situation again here, and they have that opportunity again to take it to a bigger company. And so that's what I like about them, you know, a lot of the time. And most of them, you know, have cash and are ready to go. You know, it's just a matter of time before something positive happens. So I just think we're at the right, you know, period in the timing of these company cycles to take advantage, you know. So lovely stuff. Sash, thanks very much for that. I'll also put a link to your Twitter, your Twitter account on the website there, so people can follow you and follow your tweets. Speak soon, fella.
Thanks, Justin. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Pork Chop Minty. I wonder if it's a real name or not. And Minty, by the way, is in brackets. And thank you for suggesting this, Pork. Can I call you Pork? But Pork suggests Motive Bio as the penny stock with potential. It's MTFB. I do hold stock in this company, actually. And Graham Lumsden's been on the podcast quite a few times. What does the company do? Motive Bio is a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company which specializes in developing novel antibiotics designed to be effective against serious and life-threatening infections caused by multi-drug resistance bacteria. And this is becoming an ever-increasing problem. This is not in the script. I know this. And apparently, in the next 10 years, we can all die of just small infections because these bacteria are growing resistance to antibiotics, which we need in everyday operations. Anyway, how many shares does the company have an issue? 106 million. What's the current price of market cap? It's 50.5 pence. Market cap, 55 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? Motive successfully raised 22 million via institutional fundraising. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, may soon list on NASDAQ. Giving exposure to big specialist investors and biotech funds, giving serious share price upside potential. Number two, huge undervalued when compared to similar companies such as Sempra and Paratech. And number three, Ilclaprim, late-stage antibiotic, huge potential, huge market for a product the world is desperate for. And it could be on the market by 2018. So check that out. I think it's worth doing some research on that. It's Motive Bio, MTFB. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, go to the website there. That's at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the blog there and you can look at all the links, including that very important link to donate some money to Nick, who we need to get to the US. Get treatment for Lyme disease. Thank you for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.